Hi, this is Jim Minnick. Those of you who listen to the Nostrum podcast or who read my blog or just run into me on the street know that I've had a real hassle with something I've been trying to do. A few months ago, I got the idea to interview John Cruise. John, of course, does interview a lot of other people for the Victory Briefs website, and I thought it would be fun to turn the tables a little bit and run an interview of him. Now, my idea for doing this would have been to record a live interview. I find it fun to do live recordings, and I thought it would be a lot easier to do a live recording than to do one where I write down all the what he says and blah, blah, blah. It'd be a lot easier to do it live than to do that kind of paper interview. And also I had bought myself a little microphone that you hook up to your iPod. And this seemed to be like a great idea. I would take my little microphone hooked up to my iPod and we would sit down and talk. And, you know, I'd edit it down a little bit and then put it up on the internet and people could listen to find out what John Cruise is really like. Now, unfortunately, I did have the interview. That worked out fine. John and I sat down at the Mid-Hudson League tournament in Monticello at the beginning of November. And we conducted an interview for about an hour, so we had a great interview. I asked him all sorts of questions about this and that, and we used my little microphone hooked up to my iPod. The problem is I had tested this at great length. I had made sure that it worked and it recorded and it went onto the iPod. That was no problem, and I do have it on my iPod. I have a very long interview, unedited, on my iPod. Unfortunately, I've had enormous difficulty getting it off the iPod and onto my computer so that I could edit it down and disseminate it to people over the internet. And it's been very disappointing to me. Obviously, I could, if I were so inclined, simply just pass my iPod around and everybody could listen to the interview that's on there. But that would probably be prohibitive in terms of getting it to as many people as I would like to get it to. And knowing the people that I would like to get it to, the likelihood of my getting the iPod back is rather small. So I had to come up with something different. And what I've done is decided to recreate the interview from scratch. So I can listen to it. I can sit here now and listen to it on my iPod, and I'm going to do that. And what I'm going to do is sort of do a virtual version of the interview on this recording so that you can hear my questions and John's answers. Now, if I were to do this literally, it would take a really, really long time. And I might as well just go interview him again and you could hear what he says. And because he's welcomed the idea that I would come back and interview him again. He says, that's fine, but I don't want to do that because, no offense to John, but, you know, I've done it, you know, and I don't want to do it again. You know, the thrill is gone. No offense to John, but the thrill is gone. On the other hand, I do have the raw data when it was fresh. So what I'm going to do is, like I say, recreate a virtual version of this interview. So I'm going to ask the questions myself, and I'm going to answer the questions using what John said in the answers to the questions. But for the sake of speed, I might edit it down a little bit. So it won't be the whole thing. I'll edit it down. It won't be exactly what he said all the time, but it'll definitely be the gist of what he said or the meaning of what he said. I'm not going to change that. Another thing I'm going to do is, so you'll understand who's talking. I'm going to talk like this. This is the way I talk. This is me talking. But for John, I'm going to talk a little differently. And again, those of you who know me know that I've always referred to him as O'C. And this comes from his email address when he was at Vassar, which was J-O-C-R-U-Z, J-O Cruz, John O. Cruz. I always assumed that when you went to Vassar, there was an Irish requirement and that he had lied when he was going to school and said he was really Irish and that his name wasn't John Cruise, but it was John O'Cruise. So for the sake of this interview, I've decided that he'll be Irish. He will talk like an Irish person, which is not going to be very easy because I practiced talking like an Irish person, and my Irish person talks a little bit like an Irish person and a little bit like some other British Island person, maybe a Scot or Welsh. And also sounds a little like a Pakistani, and a few other things that are hard to figure out. But at least you'll know, if it's me talking like this, then it's me. And if it's me talking in some funny accent that's sort of Irish, then that would be John. So I'm just going to begin, and you'll have to just sort this out for yourself. So the first question I have is for you, John O'Cruise, to tell us about your own history as a debater. I mean, you did debate in high school, didn't you? Oh, timer, that's a great question to begin with now, isn't it? I was a debater in high school. I debated for the Great Neck South school. We had Great Neck South was the school that I went to. There was a Great Neck North. They didn't have debate there. No debate at the Great Neck North, but we did have debate at the Great Neck South, which was very, as a matter of fact, all the Long Island schools were right around there. We had the Rosalind School, which was right around the corner from us, and the Chaminade, which is around the other corner, and all the other Long Island debate schools were right there, boom, right on top of each other, debating each other like it's going at us. I mean, we would just walk out the street and poof, start debating. It was as simple as that. So my understanding is that there's a league of Long Island debate schools, right? I mean, you stay on the island pretty much and you all debate each other. Well, definitely. We're debating each other, like I say, like it's going out of style. We had what we call the Long Island Forensics Association, the LIFA. I'm a child of LIFA. And how is this league, the LIFA League, run? Oh, well, we had, it was very different from some of the things you see nowadays. We had, we didn't have student judges. No student judges were allowed. It was only parent judges. Very difficult to get parent judges. We'd be putting together the parent judges on Friday night and Saturday morning even, because we had single flights and only parents were allowed, so you couldn't have student judges. So I'm very much a product of having been raised by parent judges, and I love parent judges. Parent judges make the world go round, and also they're chaperones and adults that keep people from, you know, causing a ruckus at tournament. We can't have ruckuses or ruckai. We can't have a rucky. Can't have ruckus, ruckies. You can't have fracases, fracci. You can't have a lot of problems at a tournament. And if you have a lot of parents, you're not going to have a lot of problems now, are you? And after high school now, you went to college. You went to Vassar. That's right. Ah, yes, old sir. That's quite right. I went up to Vassar. I originally thought I'd major in history, and then maybe I thought I'd major in history and political science, and then at one point I even thought I'd major in German, a double major in history and in German. But then I realized that, first of all, I would never graduate to have the double major because it would take so many years to get it, and on top of that, I'd have to speak with a German-Irish accent, and you wouldn't want that now, would you? Now, going into school, what exactly were you looking for? I mean, were you thinking of going in as a teacher? Oh, no, old-timer. As a matter of fact, once when I was young, I even thought I might be a rabbi. But I got over that and decided that I was not rabbinical. So I put the rabbi behind me, so to speak. So you didn't go in wanting to be a teacher then? Oh, actually, there were many times when I thought of being a teacher. I thought I'd be a teacher in the college level. I thought I'd go get a PhD. I loved history, and I thought I'd get a PhD for the college level. So I studied a lot of history in college, and I majored. My favorite study was the history of sex in the 19th century, sexuality in the 19th century, which is a very fascinating subject because they were doing it and talking about it, and they just wouldn't shut up. And so there's a lot of source material for anyone who's really into the 19th century or sex or just sex in the 19th century. Now, while you were at Vassar, you did run tournaments. Now, where did that whole idea come from? Well, old-timer, let me tell you, when I went into Vassar, I was thinking already I might want to have a round robin. You know, a nice round robin would be sort of very good. But, of course, the round robin that I was thinking of was the kind of round robin where it was younger people, not the old timers, not the so-called big names of debate, but the little names or you know, short names, the names that are easy to pronounce, you know, from because nothing worse than having a tournament, and you're up there and you're pronouncing these names, and they're from countries you never even heard of, you know. So I wanted a nice small tournament for sophomores with names like Smith and Jones, right, and O'Reilly. Okay, so but I did also like the idea of doing a regular tournament at the same time. The problem, of course, being that it was hard to find a weekend. It's very hard to find a weekend and you'll have to forgive me, because sometimes not only do I sound like a Palestinian, a Pakistani, which is the same thing, they start with P, but sometimes I sound like a Scot. You beam me up, you know what I mean? So anyhow, you can't get a weekend. No one will give you a weekend. I mean, at one point, I got a message from a coach, and he said he'd smite me with his mighty sword if I took his weekend. I mean, this was outrageous, you know. I mean, I can't be smitten by mighty swords and are trying to run a debate tournament. So the tournament, though, it did get started. I mean, I know the round robin is still there and still very active, but the tournament itself has come and gone. Yes, well, there's a story there now, isn't there? In the very beginning, it was very hard to get anyone to help us out. I asked you if you remember correctly, and you said no, you son of a... everybody was busy. It was all the weekends were taken, as I said, and it was very late in the year, and no one wanted a debate, and it was like March, April. And March, April, everybody's like, yeah, well, they're done, you know, they're done. And very hard to get people in. But we starting out, I didn't manage to get, we had one supporter, the Reverend Greg from wherever he comes from. And he came up and helped out, which was good, because he's sort of crazy. And you need crazy people. You need crazy people to run a tournament, because the sane people are just going to go crazy. But if they're already crazy, you're fine. So he helped out in the beginning. But again, having the off late in the year, because we didn't want to get smitten, you know, we were hard to bring people in. So one of the things we finally did was we had a challenge tournament, which was, I think, the first one in the Northeast to have a challenge tournament, where the more you suck, the more you got to pick somebody good to debate with, right? And that was a big hit. It was a very big hit, and I was very big running around and waving me microphone and all sorts of stuff like that. You know what I mean? It was very good. The downside was that the tournament was being run by our Parley team, and the Parley people they're not crazy, they're like nuts, and they refuse to use software. They didn't believe in software for running a tournament. They believed in using the index cards. I mean, index cards went out with the Avignon Pope, you know what I mean? And so they're using the index cards, and the whole tournament is going to hell in a handbasket, if you pardon the expression, and I know you do. So anyhow, we're going to hell in a handbasket, and they lock me out of the tab room of my own tournament. I'm sitting on the floor. Shaitan Herzig's running around taking pictures of me sitting on the floor in front of my own tab room, locked out. It was a low point in the history of Vassar. Bringing guys in was another low point, but this was a low point in the tournament. And, the tournament just sort of... Well, there was a blizzard on top of all of this. There was a blizzard. So at least I got to blame the blizzard for the problems, but it was pretty much marked the end of the tournament. But the round robin, she goes on. She goes around every year with the little name people. Somewhere along the line, you got involved with the victory briefs people. Well, let me tell you, I got involved with victory briefs for a number of reasons. But you know, I had known about the briefs when I was a lad back on Long Island, back on the farm. And you know, our team was small, and we didn't have a lot of access to arguments. And our coaches were very busy doing the administration stuff, you know. But they weren't working on cases with us, so you know, it was nice to get the victory brief stuff, and it would sort of, you know, give you some idea what else was going on in the world. Anyhow, when I got out of college and I saw that the victory briefs people, Michael Beetz had put together the idea of the victory briefs daily, which was like a blog. They had before this, there was this LDDebate.org, which was a forum, and I was a big poster on the forum. I used to post the 400 or 500 entries a day. You know, but the forum, you know, it's very diverse. It's all over the map. The blog format that Mr. Beetz was putting together seemed to me to be a very good way of doing things. But I look at it and I'm thinking to myself, Well, these are all people from somewhere else. I mean, these are people from California. These are people from Minnesota. You know, where's the people from the Northeast? So I think to myself, I'm gonna do something about this. So I start sending Beats these results from the Northeast. You know, and then after a while, Beats, he said to me, well, why don't you help out here a little bit? You start doing a little more work, you put in a few more postings. And we're going to put you, first of all, we're going to put you in charge of the photographs. You know, they already had some photographs. And the first photographs, of course, were from Minnesota. You know, I thought that I'd do some of my own photographs. I mean, did my own photographs, and I would always take the picture. I always take the pictures of the winners and the losers of the tournaments. Of course, they don't know whether they win or lost yet. I get them together. I get them together before the final, when they're still talking to each other, before they, like, kick each other in the face like they do sometimes. And I have one of them hold the winner and the other one hold the loser trophy. Well, it's not loser. I mean, they're coming in second. They beat 900 other people, you know. But from this point of view, they're thinking they're losers. You know, so anyhow, I got the one with the... Each one gets to hold the trophy in a different picture. So I got, like, the Dewey defeats Truman picture, you know. And I got the Truman defeats Dewey picture, you know. Whichever one you need. And I always put the right one on. I do not want to be putting the wrong one on. I don't want to be hearing this. So you put the wrong picture on. Not good. But anyhow, Beats put me in charge of the pictures and more of the stuff until I got to be in charge of putting something on every day. Every day, whether there's something to put on or not, which is very difficult if you got nothing to say. You got nothing to say, so you put on a piece. You say, well, like today's nothing to say day. I got nothing to say today, so what do you got to say? You got to say something today, because I'm not going to say nothing. So this is, we call that an open thread. An open thread. They pay me for that. Well, actually, they don't pay me for this. But, you know, if they paid me, they'd pay me for this and for doing nothing, isn't it? I mean, it's a miracle. It's an absolute miracle. So what exactly is the goal, the aim of Victory Briefs? The organization, that is. That's a very good question now, isn't it? When I first signed up myself, I thought it was all about the national circuit, you know, the national circuit people. But now that I got to know Victor... Victor G, who is, the victor, I guess, of victory, if you know what I mean. And he's providing resources for a lot of debaters. You know, that's the whole brief things. You provide some resources, yeah, they're making a buck or two, you know, but they're not coming out hand over fist, let me tell you. But they're providing resources. And the other thing that they're trying to do is build a community. A community of everybody, not just a community, your national circuit people. I mean, your national circuit people. I mean, you could take, you know, they're just a small number of people. There's all sorts of people out there. And the whole point of the brick, of the victory, of how, I don't know how to say this with an accent, the whole point of the Victory Briefs piece is for everybody, resources and community for everybody. Like I say, when I went and started it myself, and I started working for them, I thought it was for circuit people, but no, it's not for your circuit people. No, old-timer. Not for the circuit people. For everybody. So how did you get involved with the Bronx High School of Science? Ah, that's a good question, old-timer. There was a girl who was a debater from Bronx Science, and her name was Ting Ting Tam Tom Tum Ting. And there's a lot of T's, and you'd see, and her name was very interesting to me. And I'd see her in various places, and I'd see her on the skims, and sometimes they put her name down as TTT. And, you know, that's very unusual to see a TTT. You know, you hardly ever even see a TT, much less a TTT. So I thought this was very interesting. And I got to know her, and she told me there was a job at the Bronx that I might be interested in. And I'm thinking to myself, well, I'm not going to take this job. This sounds terrible. I mean, I'm going to take, let's see if we get Beats to take it. Yeah, but Beats, I couldn't convince Beats to take the job. So that's where I looked into it myself. Now, everybody, with one exception, everybody in the debate community told me I'd be crazy to take this job. I'd be crazy. I'd be out of my mind to take this job. You, as a matter of fact, old-timer, you were the only one who told me that I should take this job. Everybody else said, you go crazy, you'll go nuts, you'll never be heard from again. They'll just bury you there. They'll bury you in the back of the Bronx. That'll be the end of you. There's a lot of conflict there with the administration, and there's 1,000 kids on the team. There's more kids on the team than there are in the school. It's very unusual. Very unusual. More kids, this is true, more kids are on the team than in the school. And the alumni are breathing down your neck the alumni are very supportive, but there's a lot of them. There's more alumni than there are unalumni, if you know what I mean. So there's a lot of complications here, and everybody said it'd be crazy to take this on. But as you said to me, it would be a challenge. It'd be a growth. So I looked into the job, and I did take on the job, and I'm still learning. I'm learning a lot of stuff because, like I say, it's a big organization, and you can't. And my own experience, I'd be coaching one or two kids at a time, and now I'm coaching a couple of thousand. And you know, that sort of forces you to delegate some stuff. And I'm not like what you would call the world's greatest delegator, but I'm learning as I go along. So I guess the whole thing becomes a balancing act then. Not only balancing just the kids on your team, but balancing what tournaments they're going to go to between the local and, you know, the national tournaments. Oh, you make a pretty good point there, don't you? Because, I mean, people associate me with the national circuit for some reason. Like as if I were a national circuit debater myself, which I never was. I mean, I broke once or twice at tournaments you might call national circuit, but I was never a national circuit debater, begotta, no way. And, I mean, I just, I'm not, you know, I have nothing against the national circuit, but, you know, I'm not a national circuit person. And now, with our very big team, I have to make some decisions now, don't I? I have to decide whether I'm going to go to a big fancy tournament or whether I'm going to go to a local tournament. But the nice thing is, I got kids that could do anything. You know, you got, like I say, when you got a couple of thousand kids on your team, you got some that are going to want to participate in the fancy schmancy tournaments around the country. And you're going to have some that are going to want to be the novices that are doing it for the first time, you know, and you got to sort of balance the two. Now, the good news is at the Bronx, we got some assistant coaches and we got some faculty who will travel with the people. So I don't have to do all the fancy schmancy traveling, so other people will do it. So I'm still learning, you know, I'm still learning how to do it. I'm not quite sure which is the best way to go, whether I want to go here, whether I want to go there, you know, but I'm learning this. I mean, some of these tournaments are a lot of fun. These national circuit tournaments, they feed you and you get to sleep in the morning. You know, and you get to have an evening off and have a nice meal in the evening and relax with your friends. And the local tournaments, you hardly ever get a minute's rest, if you know what I mean. So these are nice tournaments to be going to. But I got to make up my mind. I got to assemble the right elements in the right places. And as I say, I got help. I got help from the school, with people who will travel. And it makes it sort of my decision. And I'm still learning which way to go. But I'm learning that I have to be where I have to be. And I'm not quite sure yet where that is on a given weekend. But I'm learning it as time goes by. That sort of raises the question about the national circuit and what your own feelings about the circuit are. Well, I'm glad you're asking that, aren't I now? Because I don't for one believe that there is a national circuit style. There are some styles that you tend to see on the national circuit more than some other places, perhaps. But there isn't just one national circuit style. Oh, my God, no. There's lots of styles on there. As a matter of fact, I think it's the perception that there is a national circuit style that actually mitigates against some very good debaters giving it a shot. They think, well, I'm not that kind of debater, and I'm going to get my head handed to me if I do this. And it's not true. There's plenty of good debaters who don't argue, shall we call in what I think you're thinking about here when you say national circuit styles, and they've come from schools like your own, Andrew Cutson, and they come from schools like Scarsdale. And they come from schools in the Northeast, and they come from schools in Florida, and they come from a lot of schools. So yes, there may be a national circuit. The national circuit may be a place where you can hear some things that you might not hear on some of your local circuits. But the national circuit is a big place, and there's room for a lot of people. And a good debater is going to debate successfully on the national circuit, period. Regardless of whether or not they're running some cockamamie, knocking this nonsense, if you know what I mean, old timer. So do you think there's problems with the national circuit? Well, I think there may be some problems. Certainly I was at a tournament. I was down in St. Mark's in Texas, or maybe it wasn't St. Mark's because, well, I'm actually not John Cruz, and so I can't remember what I just said without actually playing it again, and I'm not going to do that. But I was somewhere in Texas. You know, it's a big state, so I was somewhere. And people are debating in front of me as if I understand what they're talking about. And I say in my little sheet that I give out that don't be asking me this stuff. I mean, don't be asking me about these things. I don't understand these things. I got a paradigm, and you're not on the paradigm here, are you now? But people think I'm very national circuit, and I'm not. But anyhow, I think one of the big problems, of course, with the national circuit, these are great tournaments, but they're very, very expensive. People can't afford to go to these things. And so really rich ghouls can go. But, I mean, take New York, for instance. I mean, New York City, you'd think we got 20 billion debaters that just live in, you know, in a one block kind of thing. But you go to a tournament and you hardly see a New York. You don't see a New Yorker anywhere because they can't afford to go. It's really horrible. And they're missing something good, I think, because it's fun to mix and match some of the different styles, from around the country. But I think we're lucky. We're lucky in most of the areas that they have local debate, and local debate where everybody gets a chance to do something. Because, as I said, I wasn't a national circuit person myself. I mean, to me, the biggest trip that I took was going up to Albany for the state championship every year. I mean, you know, this to me was the big time. The big time was going to Albany. And I got a lot out of it and made something out of me and really cared about it. And I think most theater kids are getting all that they really need to get out of debate from going to this kind of local thing and getting all the skills and the ideas that come from debating wherever they debate. They don't have to be going to some national circuit to be getting this stuff. Okay, well, I'm going to agree with you there, because personally, the best debaters I've known are not measured by how well they do as debaters in competition, but how well they share with their teams, how well they bring what they've learned to the younger kids, how well they really, you know, have grown and been educated and shared their stuff. Now, sometimes it's the same kids who have done extremely well competitively. I don't want to say that these two things are mutually exclusive, but I 100% agree with you there, that the real experience and the real benefits to people from debate have nothing to do with being the greatest competitor in the world. That's a nice thing. But there are other things that really make this activity useful and desirable for kids. Old timer, I couldn't agree with you more there now, could I? Well, you do a lot of judging now. I mean, do you enjoy the judging? Oh, I love to be judging. I'm quite the fan of judging. I mean, I don't like to be the one out of the panel of three that they're not trying to get the vote for, if you know what I mean. But most of the time, I like judging quite a bit, and especially like judging the younger kids. You know, the younger kids where they may not know exactly what to be doing yet, because I feel like those are the ones that'll actually listen to you when you talk to them a little bit, and they'll get something out of it. I mean, if you're talking to some of these others, they know everything, and they just want to know who won. Whereas you're working with the other ones and you're really helping them get some of the, you know, the real feel of debate, real getting the real feel of the debate out of hearing what you're saying to them. Well, speaking of, I mean, just debate in general, you're notoriously a historian of debate. Now, why do you consider it necessary to save every schematic ever? Well, it's not like I'm saving every schematic ever now, am I now? I mean, I'm not saving the schematics here today. I don't see any. You don't see me putting them in my pocket now, do you? But I do think that people should have a respect for the history of the activity. I mean, a lot of people like to say, well, I know who won every TOC, going back to the, you know, 1423. But there's other tournaments as well, and I think that the debaters at those other tournaments ought to be honored, and that we are following in some traditions. There are some traditions out here, and every time a debater gets up there and opens their little mouth, they're following the traditions of other people, and it's good to know who those other people were and what those traditions were. I mean, I am a historian, aren't I now? I mean, I majored in history, and I'm a bit of a trivia buff. I mean, I couldn't tell you who won the World Series, like, ever, but I mean, I know a lot of other stuff. Like I told you before, I know the history of sex in the 19th century, and there aren't a lot of people that know too much about that, and I know all the little trivial parts, as well as the big parts. That's pretty good now, I'd say. So I like the trivia of stuff, and I like the trivia of debating. I love the trivia of debating as much as anything. I mean, I'm in the debating world now, aren't I? So why wouldn't I like the trivia of debating as well, and think that it ought to be shared out with a lot of people, that it means something to a lot of people now, doesn't it? So where do you see yourself going from here? I mean, where do you see yourself in the future? Well, I tell you, I see myself at Bronx Science teaching now, don't I? I mean, at the moment, I'm just a substitute teacher, but I'm getting me credits, and by the end of the year, I'll be an accredited teacher. I'll be able to walk into the classroom, and they'll all stand up and salute, if you know what I mean. And hopefully, the Bronx Science, that they feel the same way, that they see me being a teacher there as much as I see me being a teacher there. Now, I don't know what exactly I'm going to be teaching. I mean, it could be a debater or a forensics kind of thing, or it could be a social studies kind of thing. It could be a number of things now, couldn't it? But whatever it is, I mean, certainly for the foreseeable future, I see myself being a teacher at Bronx Science. Now, obviously, from everything we've been saying, debate takes up a lot of your day, but what else is there that interests you outside of the debate universe? You're asking a tough question there now, aren't you? I mean, debate does take up a lot of time, and I'm going to tell you, anyone listening to this, any college coaches, whatever you do, make sure that you don't get too blinded by it. You got to make sure you're seeing your friends. I mean, this is going to take a lot of your time. This is going to take your weekends. It's going to take your Fridays and your Saturdays, and you can't be doing too much of that while you're in school. You got to have your networks of friends. You got to be doing the stuff that you should be doing when you're in college. I mean, there's nothing wrong with doing the debate part, but your other friends aren't necessarily going to see it, and they might be drifting away from you, and you don't want to have that. You don't want to be a lonely person in debate. You want to be a very friendly person in debate. You want to have a world around you. So I do give this advice to people. Now, personally, the things I like to do, well, as you know, I'm a big Star Wars fan. I have a collection of Star Wars stuff. I got a couple of thousand pieces of Star Wars stuff, like action figures or characters you didn't even know existed, and I got your posters and stuff. And mostly, I'm a big George Lucas fan, you know. I mean, not just the Star Wars stuff, but the other things that George Lucas does or did. Howard the Duck. You don't find a bigger Howard the Duck fan than John O'Cruise. You know what, if you know what I mean. I'm a very big Howard the Duck fan, and I have the poster. And I have so much memorabilia that I have to actually, you know, I have to insure it. I haven't, my collection is insured. I can't be having people coming in and stealing me laser guns, you know, if you know what I mean. So everything is insured. And other things I like to do, I love to go to the movies. I'm a big movie fan. I love living in Manhattan because of the movies. I got the obscure movies that you wouldn't see necessarily other places. I like walking around. I like architecture. I like walking around and being a tourist in my own city. Another thing I like your Disney. I like going to your Disney World. I go to Disney World maybe every 2 years, sometimes every year. I love Disney. I'm not obsessing over your Star Wars. I'm obsessing over your princesses, if you know what I mean. And I think there's a common thread here. I mean, I like the building of a world. I like the building of a world. I mean, certainly George Lucas built a world, built the universe, a galaxy, whatever. Walt Disney, you built a world. Well, he was dead, but I mean, he had the idea for it, and they built the world. And debaters, I mean, they build the world. Or let's put it this way, they're sitting around saying to themselves, I got to build a better world. How am I going to do it? How am I going to do it? That's what debate's about now, isn't it? How are we going to build a better world? I mean, it ought to be about that, at the very least. So you're still living in the city, right? In that really fancy schmancy apartment on 1/5? Well, I hate to admit it, but yes, I'm living in a fancy schmancy apartment on 1/5 Avenue now, aren't I? But I'm not paying for it myself. I mean, I can't afford it on my sub-salary. I mean, my grandfather, I'll admit it, my grandfather sort of subsidized me here. But I probably won't be living there forever, but it's a pretty fancy schmancy place, you're right. I'll tell you how fancy it is. We got Tim Burton, the movie maker. You know, the funny looking one? You know, the Tim Burton? He lives in me building. He lives in me building. Well, he has other places. I know he lives in England too, but I mean, if he's living in your building, then you probably see him and who's that woman he's living with? What's her name? Helen Bonham Carter. That's right. You probably see him and Helen Bonham Carter all the time. Well, now I don't be knowing who he's. I don't be knowing nothing about anybody's relationships, if you know what I mean. I mean, if Tim Burton wants to be having relationships with women, I mean, I don't be knowing about this. I don't pay a lot of attention to it. Now I know a lot of bit. I know a lot of stuff about the relationships in the 19th century, and I know a lot about the sexual relationships in debate, but I really don't know anything about the sexual relationships in Tim Burton's life, if you know what I mean. But you do know a lot about the debate, Sam. Oh, well, I've been in debate now for how many years? I know everything. I know where all the bodies are buried. As a matter of fact, I'm going to turn that thing off, because I'm going to be telling you some stuff now that we can't be broadcasting. So I want you to be turning that thing off. Turn it off. Come on, turn it off. That's it. And you and I, we are going to talk privately.